Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. Last night, history was made.
Drove deep to left field. There it goes. Number 60. Aaron James Judge has tied George Herman Babe Ruth with 60 home runs.
When you talk about Ruth and Maris and Mantle and all these Yankees greats that did so many great things in this game, you never imagine as a kid getting mentioned with them, but it's an incredible honor. You know, something I don't take lightly at all. We're not done. We still got a couple games left in this season, and hopefully a couple more wins come with them.
How many games are left?
Oh, man, more than 10. So he's got a lot of opportunity here.
That's great.
Excellent.
What's the number he has to beat to be the leader?
Well, it depends on how you want to look at it.
Yeah, do we eliminate Bonds, Sosa, Maguire?
It doesn't even depend on that. So if you only want to look on the American League side, if he beats 61, he's the all-time home run king in the American League. Roger Maris still holds that record in the American League. So National League, that's Mark Maguire, that's Sammy Sosa, that's Barry Bonds. All those numbers are
steroid.
National League. That's... Yep, it is. So 73... is if you want to count those numbers. And that was Barry Bonds in 2001.
Okay. As he hits like 75, he's good.
Did he ever admit to taking steroids?
Barry Bonds has said basically nothing.
Oh. Yeah. It's funny because you see pictures of him, like he's this thin rail.
Uh-huh.
And then... He
weighed like 155 pounds.
And then all of a sudden,
yeah,
he's
jacked.
The Hulk.
Yep.
Like, yeah, okay.
Yep.
You even compare him to, like, players now.
Yeah.
You're like, geez, he was thin.
When they're holding the bat like a toothpick.
Yeah.
Yeah, back before all the stirs. I wonder what that Ruth 60th home run ball is worth now.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine? Here's some footage, because I don't think they had audio on top of film, but they're playing film and kind of narrating Ruth 60th. If they don't play a commercial.
Right.
On September 30th, the next to last day of the season, and needing just one more home run, he faced Tom Zachary of the Washington Senators.
The first Zachary offering was a fast one which sailed over for a call strike. The next was high. The Babe took a vicious swing at the third pitch ball, and the bat connected with a crash that was audible in all parts of the stands.
Yeah, I think that crowd sounds from another decade.
Oh, yeah. They do.
While the crowd cheered, the Yankee players roared their greeting.
Why wouldn't they get a narrator who had a New York or neutral accent?
Right. When he embedded his spikes in the rubber disc to officially homer 60.
Yeah, I did.
Hats were tossed in the air. Papers were torn up.
Ray Stevens in the street to do it.
Yeah,
someone
I did.
From, like, dumbass news.
Who was it? I saw him do it. Yeah, I did.
There's another thing here, too, which is if he hits 61 before 154 games into the season... That's another mark. So the whole thing with Roger Maris is he wasn't recognized for a while immediately because the 61st home run came after 154 games. Oh. Babe Ruth never played a 162-game season. They expanded the league. They added more games to the season.
That
so when Roger Maris hit 61,
yeah,
people were like, well, that's your record. It's not really the whole record.
That seems important to do it by number of games.
So it looks like the Yankees have, I think, 15 games left.
Oh.
So if Aaron Judge hits 61, 62 in the next few games, it doesn't matter what mark you want to look at. He'd be the American League home run champion by whatever measure you want to use.
If he hits a home run every single game from now on, that'd be great.
Mm. He's had a couple games where he's hit more than one.
Yeah.
That's right.
Even better.
Yeah, that's great. He was very smart to not take that extension offer at the beginning of the season. It was like, $213 million,
and he got a lot of criticism. Everybody was like, just take the money, dude. You have no idea if you're going to stay healthy.
Yeah,
like if you get hurt, you're never seeing that money again. And boy, does he look like the smartest person on the planet right now.
Yeah, no, they offered that money, they won't even finish a sentence, I guess.
Contract extension.
Okay, give you $213 million. Yes.
Hell yeah,
right.
Oh, and he knows that he's going to be brutal in the negotiations because as of like a week ago, someone asked him, could you ever see yourself playing in Boston? And it was not a no. He didn't say yes, but he was like, you know, we'll have to answer that at the end of the season.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
Oh, yep. So the Yankees fans are pissed right now. You just got to lock the guy up for life, it seems like, and just give him a blank check.
Yeah.
But I don't think Brian Cashman and the Yankees want to necessarily do it that way.
Well, we talked to Cashman. I don't know if it's just posturing, but he doesn't act like he loves these guys. I remember asking him, what's it like being in a locker room? And then there's Jeter and Rivera, and I'm going through all these names.
Icons.
And you know you're in, like, with living baseball Hall of Famers.
There's history
alive.
In front of you, yes. Right.
It's like, whatever, another right. day.
If you watch the Jeter documentary, there's a whole episode where they talk about this, because Jeter, for a while, was getting mad at the way Cashman was handling it. And he's like, look, if you get wrapped up into all that stuff, you're never entering a business room on a fair playing level. Mm. Never.
Then the players keep on taking the jockstrap out of
their
head.
And they don't pay you for what you've done. They pay you for what they think you will do.
Yeah, I get that. But he could have, in a radio interview, just saying, it's great.
Yeah.
So he could have said, I'm proud of this team.
Living the dream.
No, I don't
whatever.
Think he
yeah,
ever
it was,
shuts it off.
Right.
It was nothing.
Right.
No.
It was nothing.
I have to avert my eyes sometimes.
I mean,
you know,
I was...
things like that.
At Disney, and it was like the Hall of Presidents or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was in awe that these wooden things were standing up and talking.
Right.
And
I voted for you!
And here he is in a locker room with these people. Like, this is...
living, breathing people!
They're living and breathing right now!
You're on a baseball card, I have it!
In their underwears!
You see those pictures of the old baseball players, young and on the field and in their uniforms, smiling. You're like, wow, what a time that was.
Right.
He was in right there.
Right there. Boom. Yeah. Eh, no big deal.
Can't afford to be a fan. That's like rule number one.
Can you look up that 60th home run ball by Babe Ruth? I just wonder how much that's worth.
Didn't it recently sell?
And who got the ball last night?
Right.
I don't even know. There was a rumor that Aaron Judge 61-62, so not necessarily this ball, though they were using the special ones last night. So every time Aaron Judge came up, the umpire would have to give special balls to the pitcher. So they could try to get those either to the Hall of Fame or back to Aaron Judge and the Yankees.
Wow.
But they were estimating that the 61-62 numbers could go for tens of millions of dollars. So I don't know if that fan is giving it back to anybody.
Oh,
you look at Babe Ruth swinging at that 60th in like 1927 or whatever, and you look at Aaron Judge, what he was wearing last night, those uniforms have barely changed. I mean, they're basically the same uniform.
Yeah, same design.
Now, you watch a football player from 1927.
Oh, my God.
First of leather helmets.
Their nose looks like an S.
Right.
And they have no teeth.
Yes.
Yeah, the field is as misshapen as their face.
Right.
Just a whole different uniform.
Yeah,
it's like they're inside of a robotic suit.
Right, to protect our heads, we'll put leather on it.
Yeah, I think that was just to prevent big gashes and blood.
Right.
Screw concussions. We don't even know what that is yet.
It also smells pretty good.
I love the smell of leather. I love the smell of leather. Yay!
Yay!
How many fingers am I holding up?
Potato.
Al. Those freaking guys. That was some rough stuff. Jesus.
Yep.
Oh, they have an interview with the 20-year-old guy who caught the ball last night.
So basically, there's your lottery right there.
Yeah.
So what's the plan now?
This is playing from Twitter, just as a heads up. I don't know what we're about to hear.
Oh, I got you.
Chance to meet Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
You excited?
I'm excited.
How exciting?
Very excited.
Michael Kessler, 20 years old.
But describe what happened. You saw the ball. Just describe it.
Yeah, no, I saw the ball. I put my hand up and I caught it. Stupid question. Did he say he's going to give it to Aaron Judge?
Michael Kessler, 20-year-old Yankees fan who decided to come to the game last minute on catching Judge's 60th home run ball. This is the setup that they gave.
Of course, last minute. Like on a whim.
Top of the bullpen, hit off someone's hand, and I just reached and grabbed it.
And then you were on the bottom of the pile, huh?
It wasn't so much of a pile. I tried to get off to the side. And
I'll tell you what, if they're talking to him now, he gave the ball back. There's no way he's sitting here smiling, talking to people, having a good time. Because if he didn't want to give the ball back, this doesn't happen. The Yankees kick him right out.
Is that right?
Oh, really? I think so.
I put the ball in my pants.
They can't make him. They can't make him give the ball back. But if he doesn't want to, I don't think you stay. You don't get to do this anyway. You don't get to go in front of cameras with a smile and be like, "Yeah, that's mine." Also, he would have said that 17 times already.
Yeah. Get out of there as quick as possible.
I won!
What position you play? Outfield, pitcher.
Yeah, they're talking to him about like what Michael. Position he plays. Like, if he was keeping the ball, they wouldn't be this nice to this guy.
A-E-S-S-L-E-R.
Are you from the city?
Yes.
20 years old.
One more thing. If you met Aaron Judge, what would you say to him?
I don't know. I just try anything to come back next year. Help. Is a heart and soul ball club.
Yeah. He's giving the ball back. He's a fan.
Please don't leave us.
What would you say to him? If I'm giving the ball back, I better hand it to him personally.
Right. Oh, there's already a picture of him with Aaron Judge. He gave him the ball.
Ah,
I would say, what's this worth to you?
That's painful, isn't it?
I'd be like, what's this worth to you?
I don't know. It feels painful.
Let's talk money here.
Like, you know, it's 20. He could make a lot of money off that.
Yes, he can.
So the guy that caught the home run that Derek Jeter hit, which happened to also be his 3,000th hit, was a home run, just gave it to Derek Jeter. And that sort of started this trend where like people hold the ball hostage and ask for stuff because I think the Yankees mistakenly admitted they're like, we were prepared with a pretty generous package if they didn't want to hand the ball over to try to entice them to do so.
Oh.
And I think some people heard that and it started this whole thing of don't give the ball back. Until you know what you've got.
I'd be curious to know what they gave him. Hi, Chaz and AJ. He gave it back.
He gave the ball back.
Yep, wow. He's got a picture with Aaron Judge here, so he definitely gave it back.
That's right. Yep, and Aaron Judge signed some memorabilia for him, and he gave the ball back.
All right.
Good for him.
They should have a ball of self-destructs after a few moments.
could be, yeah. Hey,
that's why nobody gets
maybe,
it.
Maybe. That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, last minute he catches the ball.
Right.
Better than that.
Keeping it would be better.
Yeah, much better. I would have kept
down payment on the house later.
Yeah, I don't care about talking to the Yankees or meeting Aaron Judge. I'm taking that ball. I'm running with it.
61 would be the ball to keep because now it's a record.
No, so I get that, 60, but 60 is worth something.
Yeah, it's not worth nothing.
This is significant.
It's not worth nothing.
Exactly right.
Yeah, they're estimating somewhere between $50,000 and $500,000 as a collectible.
Yeah, it's a milestone
you're
ball.
You're 20 years old. You're paying college tuition money to go to games and eat and drink.
Yeah.
And you catch a ball. That should be, here's your reward.
Right.
Now, we will pay you.
We don't
handsomely.
Know what Aaron Judge gave him. We have no idea.
No, but it should be the New York Yankees that give him that. Because
they would never do that.
Ugh.
And a steak in the restaurant.
That's not how the Yankees operate.
Ugh.
That sucks.
I feel sad for this kid.
Again, I'm taking
20
the
years old,
running with it.
Ugh.
Leaving the stadium, talking to nobody, just getting the hell out of there.
Ah, it's just a drag. It's like AJ. Yeah, he went on a whim and he hit the lottery.
Exactly, right. That's exactly
he
it.
Hit the friggin' lottery.
He did.
Can you imagine hitting the lottery and then the governor says, you know, the state could really use it.
I can use a ticket.
And you have to give it back?
No.
The flip side to that is Aaron Judge has worked his ass off, gets to the Major League Baseball, is having this special season where the Yankees basically tell him, we don't want to pay you what you think you're worth. He has this historic moment, and now someone's going to hold that hostage? Like, that sucks, too.
But it's not hostage because they're drowning in money over there if they're offering him $213 million at the beginning of the season. They could give this guy enough money to set himself up to, you know, put a down payment on a house.
If they don't want to pay Aaron Judge, they're not giving this random nobody with a ball too much.
Come on, cheapies.
And if Aaron Judge...
They were going to pay him $213 million at the beginning of the season.
My point is, if Aaron Judge himself wants to wind up keeping this ball, because this is not the historic ball. It's not 61, it's not 62.
No,
if he wants to keep it, and the fan doesn't want to give it over, the Yankees are not going to help Aaron Judge in that negotiation process. He'd be on his own. I can sign a bat. I can sign a ball. I can give you this. I can give you this amount of money. That's it.
I like how he just ruined a moment.
Really?
He just tore the whole thing apart.
Buzzkill fell. Right. Let's talk to a guy who's on the HDTV's Renovation Impossible.
Yep.
And he's going to tell you how you can get your house signed up for this project.
Really?
Maybe.
I got to pay attention.
Russell J. Holmes, welcome back to the show. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, man.
Thank you. So tell us about the show. Go ahead.
So first, I have two little issues with this morning listening to you guys. Number one, I'm glad that the number 500 was the amount that she was deciding that she would give back the money. If it was 499, would she have kept it?
Yeah, why not?
That's good catch.
That's true. Very true. Yes.
Right? Was it
and
that
then
three?
My second issue.
Yes.
Yeah. Is AJ, when I was there, you were in the closet looking through the window. You have a former Miss Connecticut, and you're literally 5 feet from her. I'm a little hurt.
Yeah, he moved right out of that room.
Yep.
This is true. Thanks for having me on. I'm super excited.
No, it's great. How's this show going? What's the premise here? So a house is being restored. I'm a sucker for these shows. When I'm clicking through, I have to stop and watch.
You want to see how they come out? Yeah.
And that's a big part of it. You know, I've been an HGTV fan, even when I was back with you guys, which was like three presidents ago. That's how long it's been.
Yeah.
I've always been someone who, the same way as you guys, wanted to see the before and afters.
Yeah.
Now, with our show, it's a little bit different because a lot of people refer to HGTV almost as like visual Valium, right? You can just set that and you are smooth sailing and watching it. But then you got a guy who's formerly from New York who's loud and boisterous, and I'm like, well, I'm going to mess that up for everybody.
Yeah.
But what I like to do with this show and why I wanted to get behind this was when you remodel a home, it is one of the most trying times in people's lives, you know. And when you have to, if it's just you by yourself, it's one thing. You're like, I want it this way, and that's how it's going to be done.
Yeah.
But when you throw in your significant other, now you have two people who have two different ideas, more often than not, of what they want. And then that's going to affect time, budget, and more often than not, as we're showing, how when they get that project started. A lot of people just stall it because they're like, it's just too much aggravation, and we're not going to do it. So I come in, and I do what I like to call construction counseling. So I kind of get them to get on the same page, and if they're not, I want them to understand why certain things are important to their partner. So that's a big part of it. You know, the changing of the house and, you know.
Sounds like a counseling session.
It is.
It is, and I find it to, you know, I learn more and more as we get through, you know, when I first walk in, one, I guess I'm intimidating looking, and I don't understand why, but they start to warm up to me once we break out a sledgehammer. You know, to me, that's we're breaking down not only the physical walls, but also the walls emotionally where they can start talking to me and we can start to figure out why, and then I can figure out the best approach to tackle the issues. Like in the first episode, you know, the wife, Jessica, wanted, you know, a bigger playroom, but Joe wanted an outside deck area, and Jess didn't understand the value of that, so I had him over my house, and we had a barbecue, and she got to see how Joe enjoyed it, and so she's like, you know what, it's totally worth it. And another episode, the kitchen was a big deal for the wife, but the husband, not so much. So I took them to cooking classes, you know. So I like to incorporate something a little bit different than the norm.
Oh, that's
where
weird.
We're just in there going.
Right.
That's different. What I like about this show is that you don't see that. Like,
no.
All these shows are pretty much the same.
Cookie cutter, yeah.
You know, here's the house.
Right.
You get the house. You start to, you get all these plans. You start working on it. Oh, there's an issue.
We'll come back after the break, yeah.
Yeah, then we work out the issue, yeah. And then you see the before and afters, and everybody wants to see the before and afters.
You do.
It's pretty incredible. Like, I love the creative process. Like, hey, let's try this over here, and then you see it, and you're like, wow, that's great. This whole cooking class thing,
yeah.
that's
different.
It's almost like your Dr. Phil home remodeler.
Right.
It sounds like it's a part of the before and after. Here's the before couple, here's the after couple.
Yeah, we understand each other, why the kitchen is important to this house.
You're also remodeling the relationship.
Yes. Household is different after.
Right. Yeah.
Physically and then also emotionally.
Right.
And it's a huge investment, not only in the house and the return, because we try to figure it not only for what works for the family now, but we always have to think, so many people go in and they remodel something and it's so personalized that they're not going to get their value out of it if they ever sell the house. So we try to incorporate that also so that they're not making foolish mistakes Because to me, one of the biggest hurdles in the construction world is the lack of education. And what I like is to educate the clients that I'm working with and say, look, I know you want this, and I know this price seems way out of the world, but this is why. We need to go to A, B, C, and D in order to get there. So when you start to educate the consumer, then they can understand why, okay, this is taking 5 weeks instead of the 2 we thought, or the 42 minutes we see it on HGTV.
Right.
And I think that's super important, because when you educate someone, then they have a really good understanding of why and what went into it.
Yeah, the thing you got to keep in mind when you're remodeling is that in the end, unless you're putting on an addition, you're still going to have a 4-bedroom, 2,000 square foot, whatever it is, house in this neighborhood. And, you know, if you spend $100,000 on the interior, you're not going to get another $100,000 back. You might get some of it back, but you have to be consistent with the neighborhood. The house has to comp out.
Sure, you don't want to overbuild for the neighborhood. That's a big, big part of it. And that's why a lot of the shows, and we go in and we're like, look, pick your 3 rooms that you need. And more often than not, they're going to be kitchens, because to me and everybody, I mean, it's the biggest return.
What are the other two? The master?
It depends. It all depends on where you are, but more often bathroom, exactly.
Yes, kitchens and bathrooms.
I was going to say bathroom. Yeah, going in and going out. Yep.
All the time.
Mm. Yep.
Yes. So those are the big things that go into it. But for me to be able to be part of this, I mean, I still am just the regular guy. And, you know, and I get haters on social media. And they're like, oh, Russell never looks dirty. No, Russell doesn't look dirty, because there is TV. Like, people forget, like, there is an entertainment portion of what we're doing. So, of course, they want me to look pristine. And, of course, my hair is going to look perfect. But, you know, I just am so humbled by, like, even talking to you guys. I mean, you know, I mean, last time we talked, like, I listened to you guys when you were on 103.9. Like, I have history with you guys, and to be able to sit down and have my coffee and chit-chat with you guys is just, like, mind-blowing for me.
Now, you're really down to earth.
You are.
And I think you do a great show, and I love the concept of this show.
Yeah.
And we're linked up on the radio station website. We're just so happy for you and all your success. And
absolutely.
I love house restoration shows, and this one takes it to a whole new level.
Exactly.
Russell J. Holmes, Dallas-based contractor and star of HGTV's Renovation Impossible. Congratulations, brother.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. Just keep up the good work. You guys are just so amazing.
Thank you. You too.
You
anytime
as well.
You want to come back, we're here for you.
You know where to go.
Movie guy, Joe Myers on. Top 5 movies that are better than you remember, Joe.
Good morning. Yeah, I would subtitle this, you know, movies that I watched again during COVID, you know, that I sort of reassessed when I was really stuck and just watching a lot of stuff. And so that's when these movies sort of seemed better to me.
Oh.
And I had
it's interesting. It's almost like picking up a girl at 2 in the morning and then you wake up. You're like, ooh, this is different than I remember.
Right.
Because you're under the influence of COVID.
Right.
You're stuck. There's nothing else.
Absolutely.
You're forced into it.
So I don't know if this list might be not great now.
Well, you know, that's the thing. As time moves along and you change, you know, your attitudes towards some movies change. There are ones you saw as a kid that you watch again and say, my God, how did I love that movie when I was 12? You know,
This is the opposite of that.
Right. It's interesting. This is the opposite of that.
Okay.
And the first one I thought of was The Purge, which came out in 2013. It's a sort of a low-budget horror thriller with Ethan Hawke, which spawned a whole series of sequels. But the setup is really clever, where for 24 hours, any crime is permissible in America, you know, and it's done. The notion is that the populace can blow off steam for 24 hours and then things will get back to normal. And Ethan Hawke plays a rich guy in L.A. The rich people have built these sort of walled communities where they can just, you know, lock it up and not worry about the 24 hours. But through a series of events, Ethan Hawke's family takes in a guy who's being chased by one of these murderous mobs, and they then have to cope with the fact that they are now targeted, and this mob is determined to get into their house and kill them.
Wow. That's scary.
And it has a lot of twists, a lot of twists and turns. Hawk is very good. It was low budget. In fact, Hawk did it for almost no money. He liked the script, and
wow,
it became such a hit that his percentage of the profits, you know, I don't know what they were, but I'm sure he made a bundle because he took a chance, you know, on this group of filmmakers, and it paid off. And, you know, there have been, I think, three sequels. The first one was pretty good. I haven't seen the other two. And they even did a series, which I've never watched, which was on one of the cable channels. But I think the premise is really, there's something interesting about this premise, you know, of one 24-hour period where lawlessness is permitted.
This is like now.
Yeah, it's almost
well, yeah,
twice now.
Well, you know, you hear, you see, like, what was going on in cities like Portland, you know, and San Francisco now, and I think the movie might have even more relevance.
You know, so Ethan Hawke was smart negotiating that deal.
Uh-huh.
I'll do it for nothing.
Absolutely. Right.
Donald Sutherland with Animal House, they wanted to give him a percentage. He said, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I want money.
Uh-huh.
He screwed himself out of so much money.
You know, you have to be a gambler sometimes, you know, and, you know, you hear stories that Jack Nicholson's percentage of the first Batman earned him something like $50 million, you know, and that's 30 years ago.
Wow.
You know, so you roll the, you know, you roll the dice on that, but it can pay off big time.
Next movie?
Next movie, speaking of Jack Nicholson, was a movie that I really was put off by in 1996, Mars Attacks, the Tim Burton movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I think part of it was that came out at the end of the year where Independence Day was the blockbuster hit, you know, so the alien invasion thing had been done 6 months earlier. And what Tim Burton did in this movie, and I appreciated it more this time around, was he really did an elaborate send-up of the cheap 50s alien invasion movies like Earth versus Flying Saucers. You know, so the aliens are intentionally fake-looking, you know, and it turns into a really goofy comedy. And part of the fun is that Burton assembled a cast that included Nicholson, Michael J. Fox, Pierce Brosnan, Sarah Jessica Parker,
like Ed Benning in that is one, very yeah.
And Annette Bening has a hilarious, you know, it also turns around the whole notion of, like, these aliens are going to be friendly. So, like, all of these older hippies gather in the desert, you know, to greet the aliens. And, of course, the aliens immediately start killing everybody. It's a lot of fun. And
reality.
I don't think it's a spoiler after all these years, but what becomes the weapon they use against the aliens eventually is Slim Whitman records blasted over loudspeakers.
Yeah, made their glass shatter.
That one song.
Yeah.
That note in the one
song. Something love song. I forget what it's called. The Cowboy Love Song?
Indian
Love Song? Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be the song of the box.
Oh, God, no.
Indian Love Call.
Oh, my God. It's horrible.
And it's
horrible.
It saves
song.
The world. They say Slim Whitman saves the world. Yeah.
This makes my head want to shatter right now.
And their heads explode inside
right.
their bubble. Their eyes go crazy,
right.
spin around. And boom.
The frequency or something like that did it. Yep.
When I'm calling
yeah. the wrong
you.
Planet.
Oh, my God.
You just see their brains painting the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a bad slushy.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Next.
The next one is a movie that I didn't like at all when it came out in 1979, the Spielberg flop, Spielberg's first flop, 1941. I watched it again during COVID, and I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, I had forgotten how funny Belushi and Aykroyd are in it. There
yep.
are some great set pieces. I think the problem back then was because he was coming off of Jaws and Close Encounters, people weren't ready for him to just do sort of an almost like it's a mad world kind of comedy set in L.A. right after the war started.
Yeah, that was a great movie. Ned Beatty with that howitzer on his front lawn. He blows it up and goes backwards to
yeah.
the house. I mean, and he shows from that angle and hit points of the house. It's awesome.
I did think that movie was stupid.
And it had spectacular
Go ahead. Joe?
I'm sorry. And it has spectacular set pieces. There are some scenes in a dance hall with these mobs of jitterbuggers, you know, that watching it again, I thought just the way he moves people in vast numbers is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great director he is.
And you had, what was it, Dan Aykroyd was having problems with the other guy, and at the end, the gunpowder goes back in Dan Aykroyd's face, and the guy goes, hey, get to the back of the tank! Awesome. That was such a great movie.
Sounds like a racial joke that would never fly now.
It would never fly right now, but it was very funny back
true,
then.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
But a lot of fun, you know, and to watch it at home without high expectations, it's a good time.
And we can't forget Hollywood!
I hate to say this. I rented it and got halfway through, and I'm like, this ain't for me.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is they had like a Jaws moment because the Japanese
were
going
to
bomb Hollywood. They're in a submarine, and you got this girl who's skinny dipping in the water, and the submarine, the periscope comes up, and she's on the periscope, and they're like, where are we?
Go.
And they look, and he looks straight and goes, Hollywood!
Is this the least interesting radio you've ever heard in your life?
That was a great moment.
I feel like this is the least interesting. The girl at the beginning is the girl from Jaws, from the opening of Jaws.
Right.
Oh, no kidding.
It was a nod, yes.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely.
Well, that just made my day.
There you go, see?
I'm going to put it on my list, though, Joe. I'm going to, you know.
Give it a shot.
It what's next, Joe?
The next one is a thriller called Joyride, which had the misfortune of opening right around 9/11 when a lot of movies bombed, you know, because people just weren't in the mood. And I saw it and honestly had almost no memory of it. Late one night during COVID, I had it on streaming. It's a terrific little thriller with Paul Walker from Fast and Furious and Steve Zahn as these two brothers who are driving through the Southwest to go home. They get kind of bored, and they prank a truck driver on a CB radio. Steve pretends to be a girl looking to hook up at a motel, and the truck driver goes crazy, figures out who they are, starts pursuing them through the Southwest, and it just is it's a really tight, terrific little thriller. And the two actors have great chemistry. Totally suspenseful from start to finish. Great action stuff, great stunt stuff. I highly recommend it. And it's been almost totally forgotten.
That is a great movie. I'm remembering some of it. This is where, like, did a teddy bear end up on the front of the truck?
That I don't remember.
Okay, I might be thinking of another movie.
Yeah.
Because there's another movie like that where it happens to a family. Was Kurt Russell the driver of the truck?
Oh, that was called, I think that was called Breakdown with Kurt Russell where his wife goes missing.
That's
and
it.
He's pretty,
yeah,
I
there's
believe,
a truck driver yeah, abducts
yeah, yeah, yeah.
her.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Another good thriller, you know, set in the Southwest.
Right.
And then what's the next one, Joe?
The last one, I think we talked about it a few months ago, The Warriors, 1979, is that gang picture where a gang from Coney Island goes to this big meeting of all the gangs in New York on the Upper West Side. The leader of one of the biggest gangs is shot. The Warriors are blamed for it. They then have to try to get back to Coney Island. It's the middle of the night, and, you know, they're using subways going through New York, and every gang in the city is pursuing them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I liked it when it came out, but when I watched it again, I mean, I think it's one of the best of those 70s New York movies, like Taking of Pelham 1-2-3,
yeah.
You know, when the city was kind of down and out. It's really
very
gritty.
Seedy, yeah.
It's suspenseful, great action. David Patrick Kelly plays this villain who is one of the great psychotic villains. When he's saying Warriors come out and play.
Yeah, with the bottles.
It's
catchphrase. Yeah.
His fingers. It's classic, you know, and it's just a terrific action movie.
Yeah, the creepiest gang of all were the guys who were all in baseball uniforms with roller skates, and they had the painted faces and carrying bats. Those guys creep me out entirely.
Yeah. And it's kind of done intentionally unrealistic. Each gang has sort of an outfit, and there's like a girl gang that tries to seduce them. They think they're just girls walking the streets, you know, and each gang they meet has a different sort of character, and that's part of the fun of the movie.
It's almost like a video game, really.
Yeah.
That is a good movie.
Yeah. That is a great movie.
AJ?
Yeah, and...
For me, actually, it's funny because I saw it in the theater when it came out, and I liked it a lot. But when I was in the hospital, recovering from the surgery, I saw Iron Man again. And you know what? It really was a really great movie.
No, but that was great when it came out.
Yeah, but I mean, it was better than I remembered it. Because the whole process of him when he's making the first Iron Man, you got the terrorists are constantly checking on him and the other guy, and like they have moments to get this damn outfit on, and now it's never really been tested, so now here he is going up against them.
You can lose that movie easily if you've only watched the recent Marvel movies and you know that Iron Man. When you go all the way back, AJ's right. Mm. You feel it closing in
absolutely
on him from
right
both sides.
Yeah.
So he's being cut out of his own business for changing his mind, and he's being chased from these guys that he got away from in the beginning.
Right.
And this suit was the only option. It was the only way that he gets away from everybody. And it really was a state. Like, had they left it alone and just there, it's still excellent.
Right.
Knowing what it leads to is what makes it so prominent.
Yeah, even better now.
But it like if you just even cut all that away and just look at it as its own movie, it's incredible.
Yeah, and all the as he's testing the damn suit out and everything, and like they don't know who Iron Man is, and he's got the two fighter jets are going after him and stuff, and he's telling
it's friends, me,
it's me. And when he's testing it out, he wipes out his own car in the garage.
Yeah,
when he goes back to that village and gets those sons of bitches.
Yeah,
that's the best. He had that little thing that like shoots all the people, but all the hostages are fine. Then he just rips that the real terrorist bastard who killed his friend.
Yeah,
he grabs him and pulls him through a wall and leaves. Goes, he's all yours. You know, like, all right, now the village is going to kill this guy.
But you see how even lost he was at the beginning. Like, he just was addicted to this lifestyle.
Yeah.
And the only way that he knew to maintain it was just making as much money as possible through the weapons that he created. And then he gets this whole new perspective, and you see him obsess over something because his whole outlook has changed. It's really cool.
Yeah, he got damaged by one of his own weapons when they took out the line of military vehicles when they got hit. And he just
got
to know everybody. The convoy thing. I couldn't think of the word.
Yeah.
And you know, one of his own weapons is what damaged him. And that made him think, I can't keep making these anymore.
Yeah.
They're not being used the way they're saying they're being used. That's what clicks in.
Yeah.
Yep.
So great. I thought that was a great movie.
Great.
I have a great memory for useless information. Dude, you could turn this into money.
Maybe someday it will. I doubt it, but thank you.
All right, Joe. Thank you for coming on. Always good to hear your voice. This is how we secretly judge people. We silently, secretly judge them.
Yes.
Here's an example. People who litter.
Yes.
Like when I'm driving down the road and I see a fast food bag come out and the contents just all over the road.
Spew everywhere.
Spew.
Yes.
I think I'm not
lazy
a good,
bastard. Yeah.
Lazy bastard.
You lazy bastard.
Yeah. It's those types of things.
Yeah. I will purposely look for a dumpster or something someplace. If I don't get rid of it, like if I have my food in the parking lot, I'll use their garbage can. But if I'm on the road, I'll find a dumpster somewhere and toss it in there.
It's not really that hard anymore.
No.
Every gas station.
Gas station
has a garbage can.
Yep.
You're going to get gas at some point.
Exactly.
All right, so that's one. I think that's a good one. That's a pet peeve of mine.
It's huge, yeah.
It's just so easily avoided.
Yeah.
You just don't have to be that person anymore.
Well, you're acting like the world is your garbage can. And if you live on a road that's a cut-through road, you know, you go out to mow your lawn.
Yep.
There's a lid over here. There's a straw over here. There's nips. You'd be amazed. Like, you go jogging.
Yeah.
You're amazed at how many people drink nips.
Yep. That's my front lawn on a Monday and Tuesday.
Okay.
After a weekend, yeah. I have a cut-off road, and people are heading for the bars.
Yeah.
Yep. Or at the stop sign, you'll see a six-pack, an empty six-pack at the stop sign. When they stop the stop sign, they open the door and left that on the side of the road.
Wow.
Yep. You lazy bastards.
The worst is when you see a plastic bottle sealed with liquid, and you're like, I don't think that's the color that liquid's usually.
Yeah, that's kind of questionable. I don't
doesn't
think
look like Coke.
Doesn't look like apple juice.
Chaz and AJ.
Hey, you're talking about things that kind of make you mad, little pet peeves?
Yes.
People who wait to the last second to merge over when they know the lane is closing. It just happened to me, and I wanted to run the guy into the wall like a NASCAR driver.
Yep. I think go right into the cones, right into the crash vehicle.
I used to be guilty of that. This show has changed.
Yeah, I know. The second they say them to you know, the lane's going to end, I move over immediately.
I know. And, yeah. Like, I've argued this before on the show,
right.
And now I know it's just easier to get over.
Yeah.
But the reality is that the lane's open
until it's not open. Until it's not. Yeah.
I understand, I don't want the frustration of merging and the stress. Great.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it because someone's going to let me in. I don't do it anymore because, you know, the world is just like, I'm a snowflake. I can't handle this. You're a bad person.
Right.
My life's just easier if I don't let that frustrate me. I used to get really upset by that as well.
I was witness to that.
Yep.
Not today!
I had him screaming through my ear to get out the window, the passenger window that he had opened.
That wasn't a construction zone, but I know what you mean. Yeah. What happens now, though, with these trucks, and the caller's right about this, is that first truck is telling you, you got to move over. And people know that they're not doing any work just yet. They go around the truck and get right back in that lane and try to cut off like another, what, 12 cars?
Yeah.
How much time are you actually saving, endangering people's lives like that?
We're all going to be stopped in a moment.
Yeah. Once that truck is there, you don't get to move over into that lane again.
Yeah.
There could be guys walking there.
And now I'm not arguing that.
Yeah.
Once you're blocked, I hate that. Once you have to move over, you're over.
Yeah.
But I mean, until you have to move over, the lane is, it's open.
Right. I just try to move over as fast as I can. You know, as traffic will allow.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you need, the person behind you is too close on the other side of you, and you got to wait for them to go past or let you in.
No, but do you understand my argument?
Yeah.
Now, look, I don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't do it anymore.
Yeah, no.
Because everyone's all screwed up in the head.
Right. We're all secretly hating you right now.
I don't feel like getting my ass handed to me this early in the morning.
Chris in Milford.
People who don't wash their hands after using the bathroom.
Oh, that's on this list, by the way.
Oh, really?
It should be.
Yeah.
Should be.
Yeah, because you know why? You know, you don't wash your hands. You're touching the handle, you know, and now basically I just held on to you.
I just touched your wiener.
Exactly.
The handle.
Right. Yeah. You touched the handle of the door.
99.9% of the hands you shake in your life have all had a piece of the deal on it, okay? So think about that.
Right.
Had a piece of what?
So you better wash your hands. Right. I've literally been in public bathrooms and yelled at complete strangers after they didn't wash their hands. They turn around and they look at you like you're crazy. And they come back to the sink to wash it.
That's funny.
Don't make me yell at you like you're my small child.
This is why when I go to the bathroom, I wash my hands. I'll keep the towel. I dry my hands off.
I do the same thing.
And I use it for the handle. And then the second hand was two doors. And then I toss it in the garbage, you know, after I'm done.
Yeah.
Oh, I touch nothing.
Use your foot.
If I go into some bathrooms, like if I have to use the toilet or if it's really bad, like I'll use my foot.
Exactly.
Become like a ninja. Flush the toilet.
Right, everything.
Or to pick up the lid.
Right.
There was one lid recently I couldn't pick up with my foot. It just kept falling down, making a really loud noise. So I touched it with my hand, and I was like,
Here's what you do. You take some of the toilet paper off the roll and use that.
Yeah, that's great.
And use that as you touch that.
Yeah, there was no paper, no nothing. There was
the horseshoe.
It was a horror show.
Yes.
All right, Chris.
That's a good one.
I like that he just yells at strangers.
Right.
Now, the few times that I do that, or here in this building, and it's because there's like a 2.5 minute song.
Yeah.
And I'm sprinting both ways. I get here and I hand sanitize myself to death.
Yes.
But, yeah, sometimes you just can't do it.
Right. It's tough in some bars. Some bars just touching the sink they have is disgusting.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of people who make a lot of noises when they're peeing.
Well, like, I think it meant like the splashy sounds. Right.
That is a really weird trait.
Yeah.
But I really dislike when people like lean back, look at you, and it's like, oh, hey, what's up? How's it going?
Yeah, don't talk to me. I'm staring
There's a code.
I'm staring at a tile.
I ghost you. I don't even answer. I go over to the sink, and then I'll be like, hey, doing all right. How are you?
Yeah.
I do not talk to another man when my hand's on my wiener.
Right.
And nor should he.
Yeah, exactly.
And if we both have hands on wieners.
Right. We're not the Three Musketeers.
We're not talking.
Right. We're not D'Artagnan.
There's no eye contact.
Yes.
Life rules by chess.
Keith and Seymour.
Good morning, all. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
My biggest pet. Good morning. Biggest pet peeve are people when I go to the Walmart or the Stop and Shop or whatever. There's a million spots out there waiting for you to park in, but yet they feel the need to park in the fire lane, and they think it's okay because they put their flashers on. And the second person I really, really dislike is the big guy that parks in, or whoever, parks in the Home Depot or wherever in the handicap spot. And you know darn right well they're not handicapped because they got the Harley sticker, the Ski-Doo sticker, all this, that, the other thing. And then 2 seconds later, they're loading 3,000 pounds of lumber in the back of their truck.
Yeah.
How are they handicapped? I don't get that.
They have no brain, apparently.
There's some poor lady out there hobbling around. No, it really pisses me off.
Not
because I got a good friend of mine that has a handicapped sticker. And, Chaz, you know who he is. I'm not going to say anything, but it just gets me. It really does.
We do hand these things out.
That's my thing. It's just laziness. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And the handicapped people, I don't know how they get them stickers, to be honest.
I could see you having a fight in a parking lot.
Yeah. Justifiable,
well,
of course.
Well, you know, well, here's no. Last year I had a beater for work. So the guy that used to park in the with his flashes on, up against the curb in the fire lane.
Yeah,
I parked right next to him, two inches from his door, and I just got out.
Oh,
just started walking around.
Nice.
What are you going to do to my $200 car?
Exactly right. Yeah,
nothing.
Pretty damaged.
So
yep.
I don't. That really pisses me off.
Gotcha.
Sorry, I can tell you're ripping mad right now.
Very passionate about it.
No,
yes.
It's just laziness. It is laziness.
Yeah.
Yep.
But anyway, guys, you make me laugh. Have a great, great day.
You too, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
See? Feels good to vent.
Yeah. I do think we have too many of those spots at these stores, though. They're never full.
Right. I've never seen them all full, put it that way. Yeah.
Oh, my wife.
Uh-oh.
Can't wait to hear what I do wrong.
Maybe it's one of us.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
All right. So I don't know if this is something that other people notice, but I love to cook. I love to watch cooking videos. Now, when you're watching a cooking video with, like, you know, ground meat, any type of ground meat, and they're telling you how to make a recipe, and a woman has a lot of jewelry on and she's sticking her bare hands with her bacteria-laden jewelry.
That's long gross. Fingernails, yeah, into the meat.
Completely grosses me out.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. They're setting an example. They should be...
Right.
Doing it the right way. That's gross.
Yeah. I never caught that, but I really dislike when they got the really long, fancy nails on and they're doing the same thing. It bothers me a lot.
Yeah, you know what's under there.
Yeah, they don't clean under the nails.
Under there.
You
That's
can't
the
wipe
no, the nails.
You know what's under there because they have to wipe things.
Yeah. Fecal matter.
Duty.
All right. Thank you. Love you.
Okay. Love you. Bye.
Bye. Derek?
Hey, good morning, guys.
How's your head today?
Yeah, how you feeling? Good?
Nah, it's pretty lousy.
Don't ruin our momentum. Just give us one.
One's bank tellers. Bank tellers that give your personal information out loud without being asked.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't need the rest of the world knowing I got $25K in my account.
Wow. Well, I wish they'd tell me that.
AJ would be jumping up and down. Woo-hoo! Can you say it again?
I get a dum-dum pop.
Can you say it louder?
I get like...
Everybody in the bank all together now!
Like, I'm sorry, sir. Here's a watermelon dum-dum pop.
All right, Derek. Thank you, brother. I got to go.
Thank you. If you're parked crooked, I'm going to zip tie a cart to your door.
Nice.
Handle.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
That's a tactic. Yep.
Zip tie a cart to your door handle. You're parking crooked.
Yeah. What movie was I going to see? Thank you, Derek. I think Maverick, Top Gun, went to the theater. It was like bad parking night there.
Oh, really?
It's like you're going to see a fighter pilot who can thread a needle with a jet fighter, and you can't get that car into two freaking lines, you moron.
These are Top Gun's videos.
This was the Chaz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Chaz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.